Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm now joined by Bill Haney, who is the writer, director, and producer of The Last Mountain, a new feature documentary about the costs of mountaintop removal coal mining. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bill Haney.
Thanks for having me, Ian. I'm glad to be here.
The idea that this area the size of Delaware has already disappeared. It's been erased. Mountaintops have been removed. The forests on top of them, the ancient hardwoods of oak, birch, maple, beech, ash, etc., they're all gone. The mountains end up down in what they call the hollows, the valleys, creating flooding. The trees aren't there to absorb the rain, so it floods down. And every day in these mountains, 4 million pounds of explosives echo through these mountains. This sounds like a war zone.
Well, I mean, I think that you're right that the Last Mountain, which is about the fight for the last great mountain in central Appalachia between the mining company that wants to blow it up and the locals who want to build a wind farm instead and stop them, is an incredibly dramatic story, in part because it feels like you're in the middle of a battleground, you know, in the heartland of America. And the idea that the explosive power of a Hiroshima bomb is being dropped on the Purple Mountain's majesty every single week and obliterating communities and poisoning water and contaminating the air that their families rely on and so do ours is extraordinary, as is the heroism of the, you know, local waitress and former Marine and 93-year-old grandmother and college kids from around the country who are standing up to fight the most powerful interest in their state, the coal companies and the politicians they so generously fund.
And these are your characters, particularly Maria Gunno, whose house was flooded out in 2000. And she is a waitress turned activist who's leading the fight. Talk about the lines are being drawn here. If we're talking about protagonist versus antagonist, the antagonist, of course, is Don Blankenship, the man who likes to adorn himself in patriotic garb. He, of course, came to our notice as the CEO of Massey Energy when the Upper Big Branch mine exploded, killing 29 workers, one of the deadliest mine accidents in the United States. However, he was rewarded with a $6.8 million pay raise after the accident, pushing his salary up to $17.8 million, not counting the deferred compensation package of $27.2 million. So the bad guys are making out like bandits.
Well, I mean, I think that our story, which is specifically about the fight for this mountain, implicitly about the fight for our energy future, but because, you know, these folks don't only know what they're against, but they know what they're for. They have a vision for their community and a vision for the rest of America that is inspiring, economically rewarding, and environmentally sound. But it's also, in a curious way, and kind of metaphorically, a battle about how democracy is going to work. And we've seen in the banking industry this notion that a small number of people take more and more risk, and if the risk pays off, they get paid $1 billion. And if the thing turns out to explode, we all get left holding the bag. And the same thing is happening in the coal industry. And it's happening, and you know, even more seriously than the financial disaster, it's poisoning our drinking water, it's contaminating our air. There are 247,000 American children born each year, newborns, that the National Academy of Sciences says are poisoned because of the burning of coal. There are 47,000 Americans who die prematurely every year because of the burning of coal, according to the National Academy of Sciences and the Center for Disease Control. And so the idea that what happens is you get these corporations who routinely violate the law. So Massey Coal, for example, in a six-year period of time, violated the law by their own reporting more than 60,000 times, endless environmental and safety violations, preside over, in this case, the largest mining disaster in 40 years, killing more Americans in a mining disaster than had been killed before in 40 years, and that the return for that is giant bonuses to the chief executive. It's sinful. And the fact that none of us know this is happening, I don't know how many of your listeners know that 50% of the power in the country comes from coal. It's several trillion pounds a year of coal are burned. Every freshwater fish in America has been poisoned. When you see those signs, you can't eat the fish because it's got mercury. That's from the burning of coal. The poisoning of our kids, the poisoning of our drinking water, all related to, in many cases, the burning of coal. And that what's happening is that they've contributed $1.5 billion over the last 10 years, $1.5 billion to politicians, and appear to at times skirt comply with the Clean Air and Clean Water Act while rewarding themselves, small numbers of them, extremely generously.
Well, one of the more, I thought, very effective sequences in the film is the Labor Day rally that Don Blankenship, the owner, former head of Massey Energy, he organizes his guys, his non-union workers, because that's what he's been doing over the years, buying up mines and closing them down to get rid of the union contracts and then rehiring non-union workers. And one of the other stars in the film is Bobby Kennedy Jr., who points out that he first traveled to West Virginia with his father, Bobby Kennedy, when there were 156,000 coal miners, and now there are fewer than 18,000. And this guy, Blankenship, at a Labor Day rally for his workers that he organizes, makes this speech about environmental extremists are endangering American labor. I mean, it's so unbelievably cynical. It's breathtaking.
It's the same in this kind of story time and time again is what's hollowing out our economy. I'm a bunch of irresponsible executives. So, for example, as you point out, in 1950, there was 151,000 miners in West Virginia. Now there's 10% of that, 15,000. It's dropped by 90%. And yet production's gone up 50%. How has this happened? And the answer is that when the CEOs go to Wall Street, they say to the bankers, we're going to use explosives and big piece of machinery to get rid of the jobs by blowing up the mountains and using the machinery to strip the coal out. So they've dropped the jobs so that they can get paid more profits. And then when they go down to West Virginia, what they say is those darn pesky environmentalists are causing us to eliminate the jobs. And we so very much wish they weren't. In 1950, the average CEO in the country got paid 5 times the wage of the average worker. Now the average CEO gets paid between 500 and 1,000 times the average worker. The unions have been, in the mining industry, for example, the unions have been largely busted, certainly in all mountaintop areas. And instead of a pretty good middle income salary and benefits and safety standards enforced by the union, you've got people who are basically day workers getting $15 an hour, working underground in these highly dangerous places, oftentimes without a lot of safety controls, thus the explosions, with no defenses, and the chief executives are taking out tens of millions of dollars. And it's all being supported as if this is the free market. But in fact, these guys talk about the free market, but they never practice it. The free market would make them deal with the poisoned water they create, or the poisoned air they create, or the black lung disasters that they create. But in fact, what happens is the rest of us deal with it. The federal government deals with that. And a new study from Harvard, a guy named Paul Epstein, suggests that there's $345 billion of health costs, the mining, transport, and burning of coal imposed on America that's paid by the taxpayers and our families, while the profits go to a small number of executives.
Well, let me again remind the audience that I'm speaking with Bill Haney, who is the writer, director, and producer of the new feature documentary, The Last Mountain. And, of course, in this battle between the local people who recognize what's happening to them, because people around them are dying, their children are getting silicosis, they're literally, their environment around them is being destroyed, they recognize that you could actually get a lot more energy if you put wind farms on top of these mountain peaks that they're blowing up. But, of course, the problem is once you blow the mountains down, there's nothing to put the wind farms on top of. I mean, it's an extraordinary cycle of destruction.
I think that you're right. I mean, these guys come into a community, they obliterate it, and 10 years later, there's nothing. But what's so exciting, and in some ways so reminiscent of the best of America, at least to me. I live in Boston, Massachusetts, and my house isn't very far from the North Bridge in Concord. And that's where a bunch of ragtag farmers with single-bore musket-loaded guns took on the world superpower and created this country and changed the world. And it has been through American history, ordinary Americans who stood up, whether that was on the beaches in Normandy or on the bridge in Selma, and changed the country back to being a more full practice of the democracy we all hope for. And that's what's happening in West Virginia and Tennessee and Pennsylvania and Kentucky right now. Ordinary Americans, they're standing up and saying, we're not going to take this anymore. And despite the power of the politicians and these giant corporations and the security folks they employ, and dragged off in chains, I mean, the largest acts of civil disobedience in America since civil rights are happening right now in West Virginia. 4 times as many people have been arrested in West Virginia than were arrested on the bridges in Selma. And they are beginning to fight back. And they're fighting back both for our democracy and for an energy future that is much more uplifting for all of us, because they're demonstrating the United States just as one example. The United States is the Saudi Arabia of wind. We have more wind resources than any country in the world. The wind in just four states, North Dakota, Montana, and Texas, is enough to power all the electricity for the United States if you shut off all the oil, all the natural gas, all the coal, and all the nuclear, even if every American drove an electric car. And even today, the wind industry employs more people than are employed as coal miners. And we could build a power grid to ship the electricity created by wind in those states around the country for $400 billion, which is the cost of 4 months of imported oil.
Well, the thing that Bill Haney, that what I got from your film, The Last Mountain, the new feature documentary, is this profoundly undemocratic situation where you've got two-thirds of the people in West Virginia against mountaintop removal, but yet you've got 12 senators in the pocket of the coal industry and almost every other public official in these states. So there's the disconnect. It's really about this national tragedy and a metaphor for the broader national tragedy in the United States, where the power of money is greater than the power of votes.
Well, I mean, I think you've captured the issue beautifully, Ian, and yet we've seen this before in America. In the Gilded Age, you know, when John D. Rockefeller ran Standard Oil like it was a private fiefdom, and the same thing was happening with the steel trusts and the sugar trusts and the coal trusts. In those days, they controlled state legislatures, and those folks chose the senators. So they really controlled things. And ultimately, the public had to take the democracy back. And that's what Teddy Roosevelt led the charge by the American public and passed the Sherman Antitrust Act and the Freedom Act and a set of legal changes that constrained corporations, because corporations are not supposed to be the end. They are the means. They are a tool to better the public welfare and health of Americans. And if they're not doing that, then they should be changed or abolished. And the government, forced by the electorate, has done that in the past and is going to have to do it in the future. And we've seen signs of it in the battle that you're talking about in West Virginia. So when the Bush administration went out and the Obama administration came in, the rules started to be enforced. And 80 mountaintops that were about to be blown up were stopped. And the biggest mine that had been permitted under the Bush administration, which was going to clearly and consistently violate the Clean Water Act, according to their own admission, was stopped. And mine safety standards began to be enforced, and Massey mines in Kentucky were shut down, and the new mine inspectors were created, and there is the beginnings now of beginning to enforce the law.
Well, you know, that by the way, that gives a lie to this idiotic notion on the left in this country, or on the far left, that there's no difference between Bush and Obama. I get infuriated.
On this issue, let me say categorically that Obama, while not perfect, has been a wild step forward, and Lisa Jackson, this extraordinary administrator at the EPA, has been a courageous voice for the public health and welfare of mothers and children and families all across this country, in particular in mine country. So, you know, I think that there's this idea which probably most of us would like to have, which is somehow we inherited this democracy, and we don't really need to pay attention to it because, for goodness sake, you know, there's a baseball game on. I'd like that feeling myself. And it isn't going to work like that. If we want it to be the democracy we hope for our kids, we're going to have to fight for it. And the corporations, you know, they know what they want. Their legal obligation is to increase profits. They have no moral obligation. So the public is going to have to stand up. And when it does, it stands up and is counted. It wins. And the folks you describe, you know, in West Virginia, this bunch of people who didn't become activists because they trained to be or educated to be or grew up as rabble-rousers, they just lived in a community where their kids were being poisoned, and they went to their state legislature and they got the door shut in their face, and they went to the governor and they got arrested in chains and dragged out by the state troopers. And they finally started taking action, taking further action, getting arrested in acts of civil disobedience, going to see their senators, protesting in Washington, and they began to make change. And if we all do that, we can fight the corporations off. And if we don't, we're going to be in a fascist state, because if the definition of communism is where the government runs the corporations, the definition of fascism is where the corporations run the government. And we're beginning to veer dangerously close to that.
Right. And we have a presidential candidate who's a corporate man, Mitt Romney, who's completely corporate and who would, I think, if he were elected president, he just has that mindset. You know, he's not used to the to being a politician. He's used to being a CEO. He'd be the CEO of America. I couldn't agree with you more. By the way, I must say the film, again, Bill Haney's new film, The Last Mountain, the feature documentary just out, Bobby Kennedy truly is a hero. I mean, there's a great scene where he rallies with these activists outside of the state capitol in West Virginia. And, of course, there's a counter-demonstration of angry miners organized by Massey Cole, who's given them the day off. And also a great scene with Bobby Kennedy in the local cafe with the president of the West Virginia Coal Association, the industry trade group, getting into a fairly energetic discussion.
Well, thank you. I mean, I agree with you about Bobby. And, you know, he's heroic because he does stuff for people who don't have a voice, and he asks for nothing for himself. I mean, if a hero is somebody who takes risks and makes sacrifices for the betterment of others, then Bobby Kennedy and a number of characters in our film certainly qualify. And in that sense, they're more exciting and engaging to watch than, you know, Thor in 3D. And
right, but what the film points out, though, is the hollowness of the coal representative's argument when he tries to dismiss Bobby Kennedy as one of you guys from out of town trying to tell us how to run our state, when in fact the mine that is threatening the main hero's, Marie Gunner's house, is owned by a company out of Mumbai, India, ESA Energy. So,
well, we're becoming a banana republic. They're basically coming in, they're obliterating our landscape, they're poisoning our water, they're destroying our rivers, and they're repatriating the profits to India.
Wow. What a deal. Yeah. Well, listen, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but I thank you so much for joining us here today, Bill Haney. And again, Bill Haney is the director and writer and producer of the new feature documentary, The Last Mountain, which is playing at the Landmark Theater in West Hollywood and opens tomorrow at the Lemley Playhouse 7 in Pasadena, the Lemley Town Center 5 in Encino, and the Edwards University Town Center 6 in Irvine. Thanks again, Bill Haney.
Thank you, Ian. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.